From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Michael Lev with the Arizona Daily Star, here with my buddy Zach Rosenblatt, my other colleague Justin Spears. Welcome back to the podcast, Justin and Zach. We're going to do our little review preview show here on our Monday pod. We'll look back a little bit at the UTEP game from last week. We'll look ahead to Utah. And we will start things out with a quote from Rich Rodriguez's Monday press conference. I asked him about Colin Schooler and whether there are any similarities between Colin and another star linebacker from the recent past, Scooby Wright. Here's what Rich Rod had to say.
He's got some of the, you know, it's a fair, I mean, to compare anybody the way Scooby was so productive and so productive so early in his career, it's probably not fair to anybody. But when we recruited him, we saw some of the same skill sets. You know, Scooby was a running back in high school as well, so was Colin. He was a really good running back. And so you saw an athletic guy that just loves football. And, you know, he's been at that and then some. He's going to keep getting better. I mean, he's basically a coach star along with several other true freshmen, and he's got a great feel for the game, and he's a tough guy. So he's got a nice feel, and, you know, his best football's still in front of him.
So it's sort of an obvious comparison in a way, guys, because it's sort of the under-recruited white linebacker who no one really gave a chance to, who's kind of showing some stuff here early. But there were some things that stood out to me specifically from the way Colin Schooler played in that game at UTEP. The awareness that he showed on that play where he ripped the ball out, you know. You shouldn't rip the ball out every single time. Justin could probably talk about this as a former football player. But when you have other guys around you who are ready, are probably going to secure
the
tackle.
That was the smart play there. Yeah.
That was the smart play. That's what really popped out to me. I think it's only a matter of time before Colin Schooler, the true freshman from Orange County, takes over as the starting linebacker. Justin, let's go to you. Sure. What did you see on that play? What have you seen out of Colin Schooler?
Well, I mean, kind of just like exactly what you guys said. You know, he kind of recognized that he had a bunch of defenders around him. So that instinct, that linebacker instinct that every starting linebacker you want to show, and especially with a true freshman, it was kind of surprising. So, yeah, he definitely showed his instincts right there, made the play, and caused a turnover. And, I mean, I totally agree with you, Michael. I really think at some point this season, maybe let a couple Pac-12 games get under his belt, but I was totally impressed. And again, it's UTEP. So, I mean, what is really the
great –
What can you take away from it? But he got the job done. He definitely showed some improvement, and I totally agree with you. I think he's going to be a starter here in the next couple weeks.
I mean, he almost had a touchdown, but he got chased down at the end there. He kind of joked after because he played a little running back in high school, and he said this teammates told him he looked like a running back, but it seemed like in his head he thought he was about to score.
Did he play running back, or was he just a fullback?
That's
with
true.
Kind of speed, you know?
Yeah, he was probably a fullback. It's all relative, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, going off that, though, I mean, he's a good jumping off point. How do you feel about where this young defense is? I mean, especially last week, I know it was the UTEP. I guess we'll stop qualifying every statement with that, but a lot of guys, like J.B. Brown had two quarterback pressures. I think Anthony Pandy had a sack. Tony Fields had a sack. Curtis Brown looked pretty good. Kylan Wilborn looked – I mean, that's – I just named like seven guys that are freshmen. How do you feel about where these guys are at right now in their development?
I mean, I feel good about it. It's kind of played out the way that we thought it would, that we're seeing these flashes of athleticism, these flashes of playmaking ability. And that's what you want to see. There are going to be mistakes that go along with that. We'll get into – you know, the matchup this week with a mobile quarterback and how, you know, the freshman might handle that a little bit later in the podcast today. But you want to see some guys who can do stuff, who can make disruptive plays. And we're starting to see that with Tony Fields, who's extremely quick, aggressive. He can get around the edge. He never gives up on a play. You know, Colin Schooler, we talked about the instincts and the awareness and that sort of thing. J.B. Brown got some pressure on the quarterback. Anthony Pandy came in and showed me right away that he kind of knows how to sift his way through traffic and get into the backfield.
And like Richard, these are all guys that look bigger than guys they've had before. He didn't say it in those direct words, but I think he meant it like that.
Yeah, no, he said they were looked physically ready to play as freshmen. So I think it's a good sign. It's going to be a big step up in competition when we get into Pac-12 play, when we face a team. When they face a team sorry about that. I didn't even go to the U of A like you guys did. I don't know where that we came from. I meant I
was You're getting too attached, Michael. You're getting too attached. You need a bye week.
That was the universal we, I think. I just meant we as a whole will be participating in a Pac-12 game coming up on Friday.
Hey, it gets harder for the beat writers too, you know?
It does. Pac-12 play. Yes, it does. The intensity level goes up for us as well. Of course, the other big storyline in that UTEP game was the performance of Brandon Dawkins.
Wait, we have to talk about the quarterback?
Yeah, we do.
We do that?
we're contractually obligated to do so. So Zach and I, we've talked about it aplenty. We talked about it after the game. Let's get Justin's view on what he saw out of Brandon Dawkins in that game.
So I wasn't in the hot 100-degree press box like you guys were in El Paso.
No AC.
But I was at the office watching the game from there, and I mean, you kind of saw Brandon Dawkins. Usually he's a very happy, upbeat kind of guy, but you knew from the get-go that it was all business for him. And that's what Rich Rodriguez said in that press conference was, yeah, usually he's a happy guy, but this week he kind of seemed like he was practicing for the Super Bowl. That was what he said. And, I mean, six touchdowns, again, it's against UTEP, but when you have six all-purpose touchdowns, I mean, that's exactly
Can't really complain about anything.
That's exactly what you want out of your quarterback. And
the completion percentage. He didn't make mistakes.
Because what was it? Didn't he finish the first half with only one complete pass?
It was 12 for 13 in the first half and 18 of 21 for the game.
Yeah, I mean, so the best of his career,
You can't ask for much more than that. And, of course, his running ability is just, I mean, it's marvelous to watch. There was a play. You guys probably remember it. He started out to the right, okay, and went all the way back to the left and scored the touchdown. But there were some subtle things he did. He started out with the ball in his right hand, which is what you're supposed to do when running to the right. When he reversed field, he put it in his left hand. But then when he got right to the goal line, he put it back in his right hand so he could reach over the goal line and extend it over the pylon. I mean, that just showed, you know, the instincts and natural running ability this guy has. So if you can get him to be an above-average passer, or maybe a little bit better than that, not necessarily great, but good. I mean, you have a real weapon there. One other thing that stood out offensively, of course, was having Nick Wilson back, being able to use Nick and J.J. Taylor at the same time. Zach, what do you think that can do for Arizona if Nick Wilson's healthy, J.J. Taylor's healthy, they're both in the game at the same time?
You know, I've been saying this into the preseason. I think it's crazy that they don't use that formation more often. I mean, I guess if you don't use it as often, maybe it takes teams a little off guard or something. But I don't know. JJ, clearly, like you pointed out in your weekly story you do watching film, that JJ had some really good blocks too, which makes that pairing even like more useful, because then you could have one of them blocking, one of them pass catching, one of them running. And I just think with the way the receiving corps looks right now, it's inexperienced. They, outside of Shum Brown, still really haven't shown anything. I just think you'd be crazy not to put that, even if it's not them two, even if you put J.J. and Nathan Tilford in there together. I know they're a little hesitant to play Tilford a little more now, but two different skill sets, they bring two different things, and like you pointed out, you know, they like faked it to Nick Wilson in one play. I know it's UTEP again, the entire defense followed him, so it left J.J. wide open to just score the other way. Like, it's pick your poison with those two guys. It's thunder and lightning. It's kind of an old school kind of two running backs with two different skill sets, and I just think if they do that, they have something that I don't know if any other team in the Pac-12 can throw out besides maybe USC.
Yeah, I think it's just a smart use of your resources. And we're going to tap the resource of Justin Spears and his football background again here. We're going to do it regularly. Justin, if you're on defense and you know that J.J. Taylor and Nick Wilson are both in the backfield and you don't know which one of them is going to get the ball, how does that affect your approach? How does it make things difficult?
It makes things very difficult. Like you said, with that one play where everybody thought Nick Wilson was going to get the ball because that was at the goal line, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, so when you call it thunder and lightning, when you have the thunder guy on the goal line, everybody's thinking it's going to go straight to him.
Because he's the bigger guy.
He's the bigger guy. He's just going to go get his way in there. And a guy like J.J. Taylor, where he's so quick, I mean, you're going to have very athletic outside linebackers, because you're going to have J.J. Taylor kind of either go on the out route or like flat. So you're going to have athletic guys stay with him. And J.J. Taylor, he's so good on the cuts. He can cut right there on a dime. It makes it so difficult for any outside linebacker to cover him.
It's interesting because they've gotten – it seems like some of their most skilled players right now are at running back and maybe even tight end. So you can almost like shorten the group of players they have in there and kind of become a power running team. But I don't know if that's – what they want to do, but I think they have the ability to do that. We've seen that Bryce Wolma has emerged as maybe Brandon Dacke's favorite target, so he's going to keep playing whether Trevor Woods back or not. And then when Woods back in there, that he's a big dude, and he's a pretty good blocker. And Jack Banda now is going to be a tight end too. I mean, what do you think about where – is it kind of – it's interesting seeing like where the skill is at in this offense now. It's different than it's ever been.
It is different from what it's been in with recent Rich Rod teams, yeah, for sure. They used a lot of two tight end sets in that
Jamie
game.
Jamie Nunley got a few catches.
Jamie Nunley got a couple catches.
Jack Banda got the one.
Jack Banda got the one. I think Jack Banda can block, if nothing else. He's, I mean, he's kid. Physical. And I think Trevor Woods going to come back. I don't think it's any kind of a long-term thing. So, I mean, Rich Rod talked about after the game how they want to mix up their formations, become a little bit less predictable. I think one of the things we talked about last year, Zach, was they just were so predictable on offense. Like, you just felt like you knew what was coming all the time.
Your favorite sweep at the goal line.
The sweep, yeah, the rollout play at the goal line or what have you. But with two running backs in the game or two tight ends, or you can go three wide or four wide, you can give different looks and really kind of throw the defense off, confuse them. And they're using those guys. That's the other thing. I mean, Bryce Wolma with 11 catches in two games. I mean, I don't think any
he's
of us
leading
saw
the team
coming.
In catching. And
he is.
I was talking to somebody who covers recruiting as well the other day. Like, when they had this large recruiting class, he kind of became a guy that you forgot about. He was one of two tight ends they had in the class. You know, he's a three-star guy from Michigan who best other offer is probably from Northwestern. Like, he was kind of in the background. And yeah, it's interesting that he's going to play a lot this year. I think he earned that in the last couple of weeks. I think that's a good time as any to transition ahead to what Rich Rod touched on, Utah quarterback Tyler Huntley, kind of the challenges that the Utes present. He thinks this is the most athletic team they've had since he's been here. So we'll listen to what Rich's comments.
He's very, very athletic. You know, I think he was player of the year in the state of Florida. You know, he can run. He reminds me a lot of Brandon. He can run. You know, you might have a guy right there in position to make a tackle, and he'll make you miss or run by you, and then he can make all the throws too. So it is a different, and they'll do some up-tempo stuff. So I guess, you know, for both teams, probably some of the preseason or camp work would be beneficial because you see some of the similar style of offense that we're both doing.
All right, so you heard what Rich Rod had to say about Tyler Huntley, who is kind of a somewhat surprising choice to start a quarterback for Utah this year. I think coming into the season, everyone just assumed that it would be the veteran Troy Williams, but they changed offensive coordinators, they changed schemes, and they decided to go for the upside play with the younger, more athletic quarterback. And, you know, Zach, we were kind of racking our brain to think if they faced anyone like that last year, a genuine dual threat. We thought back to the Grambling game,
which they struggled against,
where they struggled to contain a mobile quarterback, and when he got hurt was kind of when that game changed. So let's go to Justin.
Sure.
Freshman all over the defense, having to play a disciplined type of football against a mobile quarterback, and what kind of challenge does that present for those young guys?
Well, this is the only quarterback they played like this all season long. I mean, you go to Northern Arizona, against Houston, Kyle Allen, he was not a running quarterback.
He was
all pocket passer. And even the million quarterbacks that UTEP put in on Friday, they were all pocket passers. And this is where the Wildcats are going to be tested on defense. I mean, this is probably going to be – I mean, this is the biggest test so far of the season. And a young quarterback like him who's always going to be looking to get on the run, that's where you're going to see, okay, will Collin Schooler be able to use his instincts and make some plays on him? How is Tony Fields going to do? How are the young defensive linemen going to fare against them? And plus, you also got to forget, not only is he going to kill you with his legs, but Huntley's got an option to throw to in Darren Carrington. So, I mean, these DBs and the freshmen, they got to stay active and they just got to stay with it, because this is going to be it's going to be a long Friday night if they don't.
I mean, yeah, jumping off that, you know, I was looking at Darren Carrington's numbers yesterday. He has over 120 yards in every game. He had 150 this last week. I know their opponents haven't been great, but I mean, how confident are you in what you've seen from Arizona's corners and their ability to play against a guy like that who's so dynamic?
Well, I think they've improved a lot since the first game. I mean, they were beaten a couple times against UTEP. I mean, that's going to happen. You know, Jace Whitaker a couple times this season has been victimized by play action. So that's something to keep in mind, because a lot of times with those read option type schemes, that's built into it. You know, you fake the handoff, drop back to pass, you know, slip the receiver out behind the corners. I think they're going to have to give some help against Carrington, of course. As Rich Rod pointed out, though, when you spread the field, it's hard to double team. When there's five receivers going into the pattern, it's really difficult
to devote a safety to helping on one guy. I'm really curious to see how they handle this new look Utah offense. We talked about a mobile quarterback, up-tempo. I think it helps that they face that kind of offense all the time in practice. But the difference is, you know, you get so much adrenaline going. You get so much emotion. You know, you're trying to make every play on defense. Like, they can't have that mentality.
Yeah.
Friday night, even if the crowd's all into it and going crazy, you have to, as our man Justin said last week, stay in your lane on defense. You have to be disciplined. You know, you have to, as they say around here all over the place, do your job, or else it could be trouble. And here's the flip side of things, the offense, okay? Utah's allowed somewhere around 49 yards per game on the ground so far this season. So, gets back to that question that we had going into the Houston game. If they can't run the ball, what happens? Where's your confidence level right now, Justin, in Brandon Dawkins' ability to throw the ball, if he has to, against a better defense in Utah?
Especially up front, which is really big and athletic.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at Utah last week, and the first thing I thought of when I saw Utah's defense, because they got really athletic linebackers. Their defensive line is really athletic. Rich Rodriguez said in the press conference today that this is probably the most athletic defense he's gone up against. Now, if they blitz a lot, this is where I think you're going to start seeing the running backs catch out of the backfield. I think this is where you're going to see J.J. Taylor kind of take on more of a receiver role, because if they bring the house, they bring the linebackers in, you're going to see Brandon Dawkins take a couple steps back, hold on to the ball a little bit, and he's not going to think about running first. He's going to do these little dip and dunks to J.J. Taylor and Nick Wilson. And he even said that Gary Brightwell has gotten a lot of, I should say, snaps in practice. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe there might be a little curveball thrown in the offense this week, but I think Brandon Dawkins, if he could just play smart and don't overthink his throws, I think he'll be good.
I mean, we talk about this all the time with Brandon, and last year's Utah game is a good example of this, that he needs to stay healthy. I mean, that was the game where he got hurt last year, and then Khalil came in, right? I mean, Richard joked that he felt like half the questions today were about Brandon Dawkins' sliding ability. And I mean, but we've talked about it a lot. I think it's a concern. He's been pretty banged up. He was banged up against Houston. I mean, how important is it going to be for him to run the right way, I guess? I mean, I know he's so competitive, he doesn't really think like that when he's out there, but I mean, he needs to stay healthy for four quarters, right?
He just needs to be judicious, you know, and pick his spots. I mean, that play he made near the goal line that I referenced earlier, I mean, that was running on instinct. You know, he wasn't really putting himself in danger. He made a play. I mean, when you see that, you're like, man, this guy is so dynamic. You want him to do that stuff. But there was an earlier play, it was either in the first or second quarter, where he was running toward the sideline. He could have easily run out of bounds, and he stiff-armed a guy.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was Brandon Dawkins ended up getting knocked down on the sideline. There was another play where he had already gained the first down, and he decided to try to take on the defender rather than just diving to the ground. I mean, to me, you have to realize I'm, you know, maybe the most important guy we have on this offense. My backup is shaken, is still injured. Uh-huh. You know, there was some sort of mixed messages from Rich Rod about Khalil Tate today, but I don't think he's 100%. So it is critical for Brandon Dawkins to remain healthy, be on the field, and be able to play to the best of his ability, too. I mean, if he's got a rib injury, I mean, that affects his running ability, that affects his throwing ability. I mean, he's smashed up his hand and his shin and all that stuff against Houston and just was kind of a shell of himself by the end of the game. I mean, and for them to win this game, pull off an upset against Utah, pull off some upsets over the course of Pac-12 play, they need Brandon Dawkins to be at his dynamic best. Am I right, Zach?
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems kind of perfect that Utah got right back into the top 25 this week, because it seems like every time Arizona has beat them, it's like that year is when they have their only ranked opponent. But I don't know. This win could kind of define the season. I mean, if they win this game, then all of a sudden things get really interesting. And because Utah's a good team, so if they can beat them, you know, go into a bye week, which would be big, and then after that, they're at Colorado, which is winnable, not easy. And then UCLA is not that great. I mean, how big of a deal would this win be for them?
I mean, it's kind of crazy to think, because here we were a couple weeks ago talking about how the Houston game was going to be the game that really kind of sets the tone for the season, and then you go to the Utah game, we're like, okay, they're 2-1. Now this game seems like it's going to set the tone for the season. They get a win, the 3-1, going into a bye week. That's crucial right there. And if Arizona were to somehow pull that off, I think they're in a pretty good spot right now.
It's the tone-setting game. There's no question about it. I mean, just look at the difference. 3-1 going into the bye. Everyone's feeling good about themselves. A lot of confidence, good vibes around the program. If you lose, whether it's close or whether it's a lopsided result, you're 2-2, sort of uncertain about things. Maybe the quarterback controversy rears its ugly head again. It is very much like the Houston game 2 weeks later. It is a turning point type of game. The type of game that can really, you know, define what this season turns out to be, whether Rich Rod is here a year from now. I mean, this is critical. It has to kind of start Friday night. And I think I said after the game the other night, Zach, I feel like the pieces are in place for a little Pac-12 After Dark magic. We'll see if that happens. All right. Thank you for listening to our Monday Wildcast, our review preview show. You can check out all our work at Tucson.com. You can download the free Wildcaster app. Check out some of our stuff there. We've got podcasts. We've got videos. We have a new interactive report card. You can give your opinions on what happened during the game. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.